I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, and here, weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, offering up a safe space to the independent thinkers, the free thinkers out there. It's Friday, so we'll finish up every week in the Friday show like we always do with False Flag Friday at 10 o'clock and then closing out the show as we chronicle the world's descent into madness. We may be pulling back a tad bit, but there's still those bitter clingers to insanity that are out there. So got a ton of clips to play on that. And one, I'm going to let you hear some children. It's a great sound and a terrible sound all at the same time. It's a clip I just ran across. Anyway, this week on the Crazy Train, we'll finish up the show for today. I'll start with a quote of the day, and that is from Thomas Sowell today. I think it leads into what I'm about to talk about. He said, "It is usually futile to try to talk facts and analysis to people who are enjoying a sense of moral superiority in their ignorance." He really is quite a genius man. And pretty libertarian guy, by the way. That's the black economist and social theorist, Thomas Sowell. He said, "It's usually futile to try to talk facts and analysis to people who are enjoying a sense of moral superiority in their ignorance." And this is really what a lot of us have run up to. That can apply to COVID. It can apply to a lot of things. I'm going to apply it to the economy this morning. And we're going to talk about it a little bit because I've gotten questions about it. Now, I'm not an economist. I consider myself just an economics nerd. I'm pretty fascinated by what we've been, the grand experiment of central bank money printing, never been done to this degree in the United States ever. And a lot of people do not understand it. And I've had some people ask me what I think is going to happen. You know, how do you protect your assets? What do you do? What do you invest in? Because I've made the point many times. There were a lot of people that made their fortunes during the Great Depression. I believe Templeton, ended up being Lord Templeton. He had a family of, became a financial advisor, set up a series of Franklin Templeton mutual funds. I believe he just went as after the crash of 1929. Heading into the Depression, he went, and I can't remember exactly what it was, if he spent a certain amount on every stock or bought one share of every stock, something like that, at the absolute bottom of the Depression, and ended up becoming a quite wealthy man. So it's not all doom and gloom, but I think that, you know, yesterday markets took a nosedive, and it was because one guy spoke. One guy. This is how powerful the Federal Reserve is. This is one of the, it was the St. Louis Fed's Bullard. I forget his first name. Nah, it's not coming to me. But this guy yesterday just came out, this one guy, during an interview, he said he thinks that the Federal Reserve should hike interest rates 50 basis points immediately. And maybe even suggesting that it could happen today. And the markets freaked out and really took a nosedive yesterday. And for some reason, conservative talk show hosts don't want to talk about this. They don't want to explain this to you. And I've kind of searched myself. This may be something I'm just singularly interested in, and maybe it's just not compelling radio to people. But because I get questions about it, and even in conversations with friends, people are kind of interested in the economy. So wouldn't it be nice to kind of understand how it works and where we are right now and what the possibilities are going forward. So I'm going to dedicate a little time to that. If that's a little interest to you, you can come back later in the show, or you can enjoy a sense of moral superiority in your ignorance, and I don't mean that insultingly. As I said, ignorance and stupidity are different things. Ignorance is people just don't understand these things. If you want to believe that Joe Biden is the nemesis that you have and that he has wrecked everything, then this segment's probably not for you. It's not that I'm going to lay all of the blame on anything from to Donald Trump, but the simple fact of the matter is what we've been doing for the last 50 years has really been an experiment, and it's about to turn out very poorly. But conservative talk shows will not talk about this, and that's why people are ignorant. And so we're going to talk about where we are right now as the Federal Reserve is facing this decision on whether or not to raise interest rates. Inflation is obviously high. They say it's the highest in 40 years. This is interesting. This is very, very wrong. And let me be the only person that explains this to you. I'm constantly watching clips, listening to reports on inflation, and they never mention something that is quite obvious. They've said that inflation now, and we're all feeling this. We all understand there's inflation. They tell us it's 7.5%, the highest since 1982. Here's the problem with that. I discussed this briefly yesterday, I believe. The way they calculated inflation in 1982 is extremely different than the way they calculate it now. If we were using the 1982 metrics for calculating inflation so that we were comparing rates apple to apple, we have double the inflation of 1982. And once you raise it that high, and again, that's comparing apples to apples, not apples to oranges, understand that the inflation that we are seeing right now is the highest since probably at least 1900, 1900, not the 1900s, but 1900. I believe there were times of inflation during the Civil War, the Revolutionary War, when we were a fledgling nation. But as we have become a world dominant power, we are experiencing the highest inflation of that period across the board. So it is disingenuous for them to compare the calculation of 2022 to the calculation of 1982 because they're different. It's just like the schools when they move A's, where they are formerly from 95 to 100, and they go to the college scale where you get an A from 90 to 100, and then you compare how many people made A's from one year to another, that's not a proper comparison. You get where I'm going. So we now have, right now, the highest inflation in modern history in the United States. People think the Fed controls interest rates. They influence interest rates mostly by money printing. Not this rate that they're talking about raising. And the problem is that the Fed is trying to pretend that it can control interest rates through these rising interest rates to cool the economy, to slow things down, to tamp down inflation, and they're wrong. Inflation is the big problem right now, and rates are already going up. Interest rates are already going up, and the Fed has not done anything but talk a little bit. They say they're going to do something, and when the markets respond poorly, they try to walk it back. They're just trying to do what they call jawbone the market, try to jawbone some slight slowdown so maybe they don't have to act as aggressively as they need to, like they did back in the 1980s, to address. In the 1980s, they raised interest rates up into the high teens to combat inflation that was about half of what we have right now. So that tells you where where interest rates could or should end up. But to show you what's been going on, and you know, I did notes on this because I know this is confusing to people, so I'm going to try to make this real simple. And I don't say that condescendingly, but the economy is complicated. The bond market is complicated. The price of a bond versus its yield is complicated for people who have no understanding of these things. And I don't blame you for not having an understanding of these things. I took a Series 7 exam. I was a financial advisor. I had to know these things, and I was very interested in it. Let me explain basis points to you real quick. Have you ever heard them say they're going to raise by, the Bullard yesterday, this Fed head came out and said they need to raise by 50 basis points. Do you know what a basis point is? A basis point is basically 0.01%. So 100 basis points is 1%. So if interest rates go up 50 basis points, that means it goes up 0.5%. So a year ago, the 2-year note had a 0.12% yield on it, 12 basis points. In less than a year, that has gone up to 150 basis points. Actually, I think it's at 160 basis points, meaning 1.6%. The Fed has done nothing. Yet interest rates on these bonds have moved 12 times. It's a 12X. Actually, I think that at 160, it's a 13X move. Now, nobody really pays attention to this. Nobody really knows it. But what that is doing is that is the market is interest rates are already getting more expensive. Home mortgages now are 1% higher than they were a year ago. And the Fed has done nothing. So my point that I'm driving home is that the Fed does not really control interest rates as much as they want you to think they do. So from my perspective, we have only one or two paths, possibly a third, but we've got one of two paths that we can take from here. And these things could happen slowly at first. There's a lot of talk in the financial world. It said things happen slowly at first and then all at once. Meaning you can kind of see the warning signs, things start to crack and creak a little bit, and all of a sudden, boom, it breaks. This is what we see during market crashes. In financial markets, they talk about taking the escalator up and the elevator down, meaning you go up at a 45-degree angle up the escalator, but when you get in the elevator, sometimes you go straight down. And so what we're faced right now, as I see it, and I'll qualify this towards the end of it, we are either on the cusp of a deflationary depression that most likely will be worse than the 1930s. And again, I'm not a doom and gloomer. There's possibilities that you can do quite fine in this. I don't think we're headed for Mad Max. Some people do. But we can either have a deflationary depression or we're going to have a currency crisis, which none of us are familiar with here in the U.S., but you do know about it in other countries, places like Venezuela or Zimbabwe. And if we remain with the world's reserve currency, and that's even in question, it might not be that bad. But if we lose the status, if they choose to inflate their way out of this, if they let inflation continue to run, it could collapse the U.S. dollar. And that's something that we really don't want to see. And unfortunately, I think it's more likely. When I come back, I'm going to kind of explain to you why these two scenarios. The Federal Reserve has got to make decisions on how they are going to act. And what they do is important, even though they have lost some control over what happens. They are now reacting. The idea that the Federal Reserve is a central bank, they say their mandate is price stability, which is laughable for anybody who can look over the last 10, 20 years and look at college education or insurance premiums, cost of gasoline, any of these things. It's laughable that they have price stability and full employment. And employment figures are also, they're constantly moving the goalpost on those, changing the calculations to make them look better than they actually are. But the Federal Reserve is reactionary. They don't control these things. They create a giant mess, and they tell us they've got the tools to fix it before it gets out of hand. I'm here to tell you, they do not have these tools. These tools do not exist. What they have done since the 2008 crisis that has gotten us to where we are right now has made things dramatically worse than if they had just let 2008 happen, and many of the big banks would have gone under. Many big corporations might have gone under. It would have been pretty bad for 2, 3, 4 years, and it would have taken several years to kind of climb back out, but we would have been on sound footing. Instead, much like anybody that you know who is deep in credit card debt, they just decided they could find a way to get a little bit more credit and get a few more credit cards, which makes the crash even worse. So I'm going to explain to you the difference between deflationary depression and an inflationary currency crisis, as I see it. And it seems to me they're at a crossroads. These are the only two paths they can choose, and you can imagine. The reason they're not acting right now is because they don't want either one of these things. And it's my opinion that if people understand what is going on, then maybe after this happens or while it's happening, you will start demanding your politician that they change these things, that they change this idea of central banking, instead of begging them to do more with it to save you, because this is leaving our children extremely vulnerable. When I come back, I'll do this explanation. Hopefully it's of some interest and of some use to people. I'll be right back.
I went home with a waitress the way I always do. How was I to know she was with the Russians too?
All right, as I see it, we have got basically two paths that we are about to head down. I don't know when this starts. It could be next week, could be in 6 months, could be in 2 years, but the time is running short. The inflation that is hitting average Americans right now is causing the Federal Reserve to do things that they do not want to do, and they've got to choose one of these two paths as I see it. So it's either an inflationary event that could lead to a currency crisis here challenging the U.S. dollar, which has been basically the bedrock of the entire world, and because of our dollar reserve status, it's made the dollar popular. It kind of hides a lot of mistakes. Countries around the world need U.S. dollars. It drives a demand for U.S. dollars. It makes it strong and powerful. But if we have a dollar crisis, that will dry up and will be substantially weaker. Right now, interest rates are going up. And if that happens, and if the Fed just goes ahead and allows this to happen, and they really don't have much control, as I said, interest rates on some bonds have gone up by 13 times over the past year, unnoticed by the vast majority of people, because people aren't out there buying 2-year notes. Most of you don't hold 10-year bonds specifically, but even bond funds. We have been in a 40-year bull market in bonds, and I don't know if I have time to really explain what that means, but that's a long bull market. As you can imagine, you know, most stock market runs have been anywhere from like 8 to 12 years, typically around 8 years of a bull market, and then you see a big crash. The bond market's been in a 40-year bull market, and that has happened because they've, since 1982, they've been taking interest rates lower constantly. Not all the time. It's not a straight line. Interest rates have muddled around, but they have been taking them down from that, I think maybe 18 or 19% in the early 80s to combat that inflation, down to zero, slowly and steadily over several decades. This has made a bull market in bonds. For maybe one of the first times, I was talking to a friend last night. He said some of the Vanguard bond funds, and a lot of Americans think, well, I can put my money in bonds. It's safe there. More on that in a minute. One of the first times mutual funds have got negative returns. This is very unusual. So if interest rates are going to go up to combat this inflation and the Fed just says, all right, we're going to let interest rates go up because we've got to slow down this inflation, got to try to crush it like we did in the 1980s. If that happens, everything crashes and we have a deflationary depression because companies, governments, people cannot afford to spend more on interest. And when it comes to governments and corporations, they're so loaded up on debt. You can understand. If you've got $1 million and you've got a 1% interest rate on it, you got $10,000 a year in interest expense. If that goes to 5%, suddenly for every $1 million you've got borrowed, you've got to pay $50,000 in interest expense. So if they raise rates, we'll have a drastic slowdown in the economy. Businesses will not be able to borrow like they have to grow their businesses, to buy back their shares, which gooses the stock market. They'll have to stop doing that. And it will be something akin to the Great Depression. We have something in this country called zombie companies. About 20% of largest public firms that we have are now zombie companies. And what a zombie company means is that these are companies that are saddled with so much debt that all of their profits cannot cover just their borrowing costs, their interest expense, not to even mention paying it back. These companies have just been assuming they can constantly refinance themselves. This is, again, I try to make it as simple as possible. It's just like anything else. You know, if you can constantly roll your credit cards into new zero interest rate teaser things, then you can make it for quite a while. And maybe things happen and your income really goes up and you're able to start paying off the debt. But if you're not there, if you're not making more money, but your interest expense goes up, that's pretty much game over. 20% of large public firms are now zombie companies. If interest rates go up, we all know, the housing market will take a big hit. People cannot sustain current prices at higher interest rates. Obviously, buying a $250,000 house at 3% is cheaper on a monthly basis, which is how people budget house purchases. How much can we afford to pay on our mortgage? If that $250,000 house, now you have to pay 6% on a loan, well, your mortgage goes up substantially. Most people cannot afford that. You buy on payments, not on the cost of the house. Add to that that if the Fed does tighten the money supply, meaning it's not going to, right now it's going out and buying mortgages, essentially. They use mortgage-backed securities, which are kind of like a bond, but they're all backed by these mortgages. The Federal Reserve has created a demand for mortgages. The banks go, hey, we can write a bunch of mortgages because the Fed will buy them. If the Fed stops doing that, they never should have done it in the first place, but if they stop doing that and it drives down the demand for mortgages, then lending standards are going to tighten up. Interest rates are going to go up on houses. And if that happens, obviously it's going to hit the housing market the same way that it did in 2008. We might not have so many subprime mortgages as we had before, but you got a lot of people who need to move, and suddenly they're going to realize losses in their houses. You're going to have a lot of people who bought during the past year. They're going to be upside down their houses. This is, I'm saying, if they allow interest rates to go up, and I don't think they can control it at this point. We're already up 1% on mortgages without the Fed doing anything. If they start doing something to raise interest rates to combat inflation, this is just going to, it's going to make interest rates go up higher on home mortgages. So we know what happens when interest rates go up to housing. Housing and construction dry up. Large job losses appear because construction jobs are so much. And I believe that this time this will also happen to commercial real estate. A lot of commercial real estate is heavily, heavily, heavily leveraged, meaning it's all depending on debt. And these companies who have all this commercial real estate have been able to borrow money at a, you know, near zero rates to expand and build. Suddenly, if they're having to face 3%, 4%, 5%, 6%, they're not going to be able to build as much, and they're not going to be able to maintain some of their properties. Add to this some businesses going under because we're in a recession slash depression, and you can understand what happens to commercial real estate. So we've got the stock market is at all-time highs. We've got it at all-time multiple highs, too. It's very similar to the dot-com time. Maybe not quite as high on the valuations as it was during the dot-com, but I believe it's higher than it was during 2008. We know what happened to the stock market then. So if the stock market crashes and the housing market crashes, can you hide in bonds? I found this piece. This was written in Forbes Advisor. And it was in a story, how to take advantage of a stock market crash. It says, government bonds are generally considered the safest investment, though they are decidedly unsexy and usually offer meager returns compared to stocks and even other bonds. And they're talking about high-yield bonds. Anyway, generally, what happens in previous times is that you say, well, you know, stock market's going down. I'll move my money over into bonds. At least I'm getting a constant yield. And government bonds are safe. The federal government is probably always going to pay their bondholders. The problem is, if interest rates start going up for the first time really substantially in 40 years, the bonds you hold in your bond portfolio, and most of you will probably have a bond mutual fund, they're offered in 401ks, the value of those things is going to go down. Doesn't mean the U.S. government on its debt are going to default on it. They're still going to pay you your interest, but the bond itself is going to be worth a lot less. And how much is, you know, 2% interest that you're receiving on a bond worth if inflation is running at 10, 15%, you're still losing 13% of your money. So bonds right now are not going to be the safe haven that they've been for the last 40 years. This will also hurt pension plans and retirement accounts who have to have a mix in their portfolios of these kinds of stable investments. And what's happened, because interest rates have been so low for so long, a lot of these pension plans, a lot of people rely on to retire, have had to take their money out of bond funds because the bonds were paying so little and move it into the stock market. If the stock market goes down, these pension plans that have been underfunded for decades, some of it helped by pandemic relief, I believe, has shored up some of these things, bailed some of them out, but they are going to become wildly underfunded again, and then you suddenly have a bunch of people retiring. We got baby boomers still in force retiring right now, and you're going to have pension plans that are going to struggle to be able to pay things back. They'll get crushed in both a stock market and a bond market route. And what will happen then? All of these defaults, whether they're zombie companies whether it's just the fact that economic activity has slowed down and it will slow down dramatically, then you're going to see large banks have trouble again as well. But the problem is this time they can't be bailed out because the Fed cannot be bailing out banks, which was really one of the causes of the problems in the first place. The Fed can't be printing up money to bail out banks. At the same time, they're trying to withdraw money from the economy to stem inflation. They can't do both at the same time. So the bailout game is over now. The inflation has changed everything. When I come back, I'll tell you, if they decide, and this is what I think might be the more likely scenario, they may decide that they just cannot voluntarily look. If they allow interest rates to rise and the Fed actually encourages it to try to combat inflation, they are guaranteeing a deep recession, possibly a depression. So I think that they may try to whiff on that. They may be too scared to voluntarily do that. They know what will happen in a higher interest rate environment after you've gotten the entire economy addicted to 0% interest rates. So I think they might try the other path. And that's the second scenario, and that's an inflationary spiral that ends up in a currency crisis. We'll talk about how that plays out when I come back. Stay with me.
Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know. On the dashboard, melted, but we still have the radio.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We're talking about the two bad paths that are ahead for us with the economy. And I'll qualify this in just a second because I could be wrong. My timing has always been poor because, well, I'll explain it in a second. So we have the first path where interest rates go up. People understand what happened during the housing market, don't you? They smashed interest rates in response to the dot-com crash. They pushed interest rates down to near zero. That led to a surge in borrowing, particularly for homes. And we saw in 2008, as interest rates started to rise, it collapsed the housing market, along with subprime borrowers who had teaser loans. And suddenly they went from 2% to 8%. They couldn't afford their homes. And they had to leave. Well, they have blown up another housing bubble. The low interest rates have blown up every bubble. They've blown up the bond bubble, the stock bubble, and the housing bubble. And I think we're at the cusp of three bubbles popping. So what does the Fed do? They've got two choices. They either let interest rates rise, they stop printing money, and they let it naturally deflate, and that's going to send us into recession, most probably, if it progresses as it should, really, into some level of a depression here in the United States. The other thing they can do is they can keep printing money to keep papering over. And this is really what I suspect they'll do. They'll raise interest rates a little bit this year, and as soon as some of these zombie companies start going under, as soon as the stock market gives up some of its gains, as soon as housing starts to take a downturn, they will reverse course and start printing money again. The problem is the inflation is already here. People are already feeling it. Your inflation is going to get worse. And I think this is what it is. It's basically a game of chicken. And I think the Fed will chicken out and try to start printing money up again. But this time inflation will surge out of control. See, we didn't really have this problem before. Mm-hmm. Inflation was kind of contained to certain areas. Now it's out into everything. The pandemic exacerbated. Well, excuse me. The pandemic response exacerbating all of these things. But the bottom line, it's all of the endless money that's just sloshing around in the system has finally ended up out in the public. And so too many dollars are chasing too few goods, and that causes inflation. So if they continue to print money, if they reverse course, if they raise interest rates a few times, they start to see cracks in the housing market, in the bond market, and in the stock market, and they reverse course and say, okay, we're going to start lowering them again, we're going to start printing money, then they will not have tamped down inflation, and inflation then will take another leg up. And if they commit to that path, then we are going to see something much more similar to hyperinflation. Again, right now, inflation is running. If you calculate inflation now the way you calculated it in 1982, they changed it in the 1990s. I think 1993, they changed the way to calculate inflation in order to hide it from people. We all felt it, but they just kept telling you, oh, no, inflation's really tame. It's only at 2%, 1.8%. We all knew that everything that we really needed was getting more expensive, but they just kept lying to you because they changed the way they calculated it. They couldn't be honest anymore because they knew they've been printing money like this since the 1970s. And it was becoming more and more apparent through the 1980s into the 1990s that inflation was coming, so they just changed the way they calculated it. If you compare the inflation of today to 1982 using the same calculations in both cases, inflation right now is double the 1980s and is the highest it's been since at least 1900. I'd have to go back and look at what kind of inflation we had during the Civil War, Revolutionary War, those kinds of things, but certainly since 1900. So if they continue to print money, stuff is going to soar. You can imagine if they print money and inflation goes up and the dollar has a crisis and foreign countries don't want our dollars very much, we take a lot of imported goods here. I don't know if you've noticed. We don't manufacture a lot of things here. If Japan suddenly sees that our dollar's not worth as much as it used to be, they're going to need a lot more of them for their goods. So the prices of anything that's imported in particular is going to go through the roof, and Americans consume imported goods. We've just had our largest trade deficit ever, and I believe it topped $1 trillion for the first time. So that is an inflationary crisis that we will have, and I think the Federal Reserve, and this is all created by the Federal Reserve. Really, one of the biggest reasons that I do this segment, why I tell you these things, is because I am so sick and tired of Republicans blaming this on one human being, Joe Biden. Of course, Joe Biden is not good for the economy. Joe Biden is a walking disaster for this country. I've got clips from him next hour I'll play that show just exactly how incompetent this man is. But Republicans thinking you can just vote for a few more Republicans, take back the Senate, take back the House, take back the presidency without addressing the root cause of all of these things, you're kidding yourselves. And you're being either wildly dishonest or wildly ignorant to believe that Joe Biden suddenly spiked this inflation. Donald Trump has got his big, heavy hand in this inflation. He championed all of these disastrous policies by the Federal Reserve. You notice we have the same Federal Reserve chairman under Donald Trump, and Joe Biden has just reinstalled him? That is the shadow government. Donald Trump hired the shadow government, and Joe Biden's just taking them and letting them continue to do their thing. There is a possible third scenario, and it's actually pretty possible, but we certainly don't want to see it. It may actually already be here, but I don't know if it's temporary, and that is stagflation. And what stagflation is, so you've got either deflationary depression, inflationary hyperinflation, or you've got this stagflation. And what stagflation is, it's high inflation with no economic growth. And with no growth, that means a lot of people lose jobs. And the last thing you want to do is be without a job while prices are rising quickly. You can imagine how quickly that could tear through somebody's savings, even if there are Americans that have got a safety net. If you find yourself in a bad economy where you get fired, you get laid off, and it's hard to find another job while prices are rising, rents are going up, cost of everything you buy is going up, you can imagine what a disaster that is. That ensnares a lot of people really fast. And because we're so far down this path, the government may not be there for you. See, if interest rates go up, and as I said, some of the government debts, government bonds, the interest rate on some government bonds has gone up by over 13 times just a year ago. The government can't afford to borrow a bunch more money. Their borrowing costs will go through the roof. I think right now we're somewhere around $500 billion a year, just an interest expense. This is why I ask people why you pay taxes. You understand you are paying. You are paying just the interest on our debt because a bunch of politicians couldn't control themselves. That's what your tax dollars are going to, just to float the VIG. The only high side to this is that if interest rates pop up significantly, maybe the government will have to shrink. It may be no choice. They can't afford to borrow all this money if interest rates are paying 5 or 6, if their government's having to pay 5 or 6% as opposed to 0.3%. Now, the qualifier to all of this is that my predictive abilities are bad because I don't know what else the Fed could do. I never imagined that they would start actually printing up money and going out into the market to buy bonds. They've been buying government bonds. They've been buying mortgages. This is third world country stuff. And back in 2009, 2010, I didn't think they would do that. What the Federal Reserve has been doing is kind of like if a husband has run himself into insolvency with a ton of credit card debt, and the wife says, well, I know what we can do. I'll just get out some credit cards, and I'll take cash advances on my credit cards to give it to you to pay your credit cards. Well, obviously, the balance sheet of that family is actually getting worse, not better, but it papers over it for a little while, as long as the wife's got a little bit of credit left to help her husband, but they're both going down, and they're making it dramatically worse. So the Fed may have some other tricks up its sleeve, but at this point, with the inflation actually putting political pressure on them to tamp it down, to save Americans from these high prices that everybody's noticing now, I think they're stuck. But I could be wrong, and something that I cannot even imagine of right now could buy them more time. But anything that they do will only delay the inevitable and make it worse down the line. This is what they have done, really, for 100 years, but specifically since 1971, when they took us off the gold standard, and on steroids since 2008-2009 crisis. They may come up with another trick in their sleeve that buys us a couple more years, but that means in a couple more years it's going to be even worse. So these are the two paths we have, three if you throw in stagflation, but it seems to me that may be kind of temporary. We're going to pop one way or the other in that. They're either going to combat the inflation and tank the economy, or they're going to try to save the stock market by printing up endless money and try to paper this together, and it's going to end up in an inflationary spiral that people in the United States have no... We see Venezuela. We see Zimbabwe. If we have an inflationary spike and other countries finally have had enough with us, and this is why foreign policy is so important, because I believe constantly being belligerent with China and with Russia, with every country trying to boss them around, eventually when they see us weak with this U.S. dollar, they're going to go, look, we're not going to trade in the dollar anymore. We're going to start using something else. You guys are basket cases. Look how you spend. Look what your central bank is doing. It's putting out all this phony money. We're not going to use the dollar anymore. That's why foreign policy matters. You think that China and Russia, as much as we have bullied them, I'm not a fan of China. I'm a bit of a fan of Russia, but Vladimir Putin is a thug and an oligarch over there. But the bottom line is they haven't done anything to us, but constantly being belligerent to them, it may make them, when they see that we're weak, they'll pull that dollar peg and then Katie bar the door. You're going to see what it feels like to not be this superpower very, very quickly. And that's one of those things where they say things happen slowly. And then all at once, that would be one of those all at once moments. The day they come out and say the dollar is no longer the reserve currency. People can buy oil in, a basket of currencies or some other currency replaces the dollar. And this does happen. You understand empires do fall. And this lays at the feet of the politicians and all of their reckless spending, which has enabled the Federal Reserve. And this is why you don't hear Republicans talking about this. This is why Michael Guest and Roger Wicker and Cindy Hyde Smith are not going to come out and campaign about all the problems with the Federal Reserve. This is why your conservative talk show hosts, who are just trying to rally people to the Republican side to vote harder in 2022, they're in on the game, too. They're making millions of dollars on their national radio shows. They don't want to talk about the Fed. Sean Hannity doesn't want to tell you about the Fed because he's at the top of it. He is one of them. They don't want you to know this stuff. They just want you to think that if you vote a little harder, you can do it. Republicans want that Federal Reserve to pay for their militarism. Got more about that next hour. But we're all in the same boat. That's why this show is for the young, the old, the white, the black, the Republican, the Democrat, the conservative, the liberal. We're all in the same boat. You just don't realize it. Bunch of nut jobs in this country, all needing to get into lifeboats, but they're all fighting each other on the deck of the Titanic rather than all getting in the boats and rowing together to get away from it.
It's been a ride. I guess I had to go to that place to get to this one. Now some of you might still be in that place. If you're trying to get out, just follow me.
All right, last couple of minutes in this hour and the end of what I'm trying to get across to people. It's pretty easy. Here's a good illustration of what we are. The Federal Reserve is like a drug pusher, and they have addicted governments, corporations, and American citizens on their drug, which is debt, which is money. They've been putting this debt out to everybody, and now everybody's addicted. And like the addict, you've got some choices. You either stop doing the heroin to save your life. But boy, that's not a pretty process. I know that from Seinfeld. Get your poncho. The withdrawals are bad. You go through a period where you feel like you're going to die. You have to detox from this stuff, and it ain't pretty. Or If you just can't handle the symptoms of the detox, you just start feeling bad. And this is what happens to a lot of people addicted to things like heroin, and I consider what the Fed does is monetary heroin. You give up and you say, I've got to take it. And what the Fed's done is they gave a little, and you know, when the dose didn't work, they gave a little bit more. We are at peak addiction right now. I'm not saying it can't go a little bit higher, but if the Fed does not move to get us through the withdrawal symptoms, let us go ahead and have that crash like a heroin addict has when they come off of the stuff. If they decide, well, we don't want to go through that pain, we're just going to keep giving you stronger and stronger heroin. Well, you know how that story ends, don't you? You die of the drug itself because you're just too scared to go through the withdrawals of it. Withdrawals aren't pretty, but it is better than the ultimate demise of continuing the habit. That's where we are. And so there's only a couple of paths they've got to say. Well, it's fascinating to me. We'll see which way it goes. And to you, I say good luck.
Yeah. What is it good for?
Absolutely
nothing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What is it good for?
Absolutely
nothing.
Say it again, y'all.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Friday. So Friday at 10 o'clock, we take a look at, you know, foreign policy fails from the United States psychopaths that are in charge in this segment called False Flag Friday, where I've tried to explain to you all of these wars are bankers' wars. They are started with false events. I think I've chronicled just about every single one in modern times, and this is not just the U.S. This is around the world. Right now, obviously, the dust-up is with Russia. We'll talk a little bit about that. As a good segue, I'll just say, in talking to the Federal Reserve and the bad choices they have going forward for our economy, it's going to be a crisis either way they go. There are no good paths out of this. They have, as I said, they've addicted us to debt, and now we've got to go through the pain of addressing that. But what a lot of nations do throughout history is when you have real troubles at home, particularly economic, you remember Weimar Germany? I don't remember when that got kicked off. It was the late 1920s or in the 1930s. Big economic problems for Germany. What did they do? They took them to war. So this is always a time, and this may be one of the great distractions, which is the Russia story right now. As a form of another segue into this segment, I'll also do a quote of this segment. Thomas Jefferson. This is on May 28th of 1816. He said, I sincerely believe that banking establishments are more dangerous than standing armies. As the Biden administration tries to take us to war with Russia, as Trump was constantly belligerent with Iran, all of these threats to national security, the threat to your way of life is actually right here at home, largely in the Eccles Building in Washington, D.C., I've got a couple of displays of some severe U.S. arrogance here. This is not anti-American stuff. This is the psychopaths who hijack control. Is anybody out there defending the political class we have running the show right now? Well, you and I don't vote for these wars. We don't vote for these policies. We just end up with these psychopaths in both parties running the show. And I'm going to show you there's psychopaths in both parties today. This is Ned Price. I think his name is Ned Price. He's the longtime CIA guy who is now a State Department spokesman. I want you to listen to him talking about, you know, he's trying to cut off Russia from everybody, and he's going to warn the Chinese.
The global security and economic risks posed by further Russian aggression would be enormous, and they would have consequences not only on Ukraine, Europe, the transatlantic community, but on the PRC as well. If Russia thinks that it will be in a position to make up some of those consequences, to mitigate some of those consequences by a closer relationship with the PRC, that is not the case. It will.
Okay, let me translate this out of a State Department propaganda speech. Essentially, they're saying we are trying to just crush Russia every which way we can economically. Chinese, don't you dare try to come in and help them.
Actually make the Russian economy in many ways more brittle. If you look at, for example, where the major inputs to foundational technologies come from, they still come from the West. if you deny yourself the ability to transact with the West, to import with the West.
This guy's accusing Russia of cutting itself off from the West. It is the West that is cutting Russia off and has been for well over a decade now. Biden administration, Trump administration, Obama administration. They've been alienating and sanctioning Russia endlessly so that they can't trade even with partners right in their own neighborhood, Germany, Europe. And then the State Department, this stooge, this hack, this propagandist from the State Department, who's a former, I think he was with the CIA for well over a decade, comes out and says, well, Russia, if you cut yourself off from the West. No, it is the West that is cutting Russia off, even though they've done nothing.
West, from Europe, from the United States, you are going to significantly degrade your productive capacity. We have an array of tools that we can deploy. If we see foreign companies, including those in China, doing their best to backfill U.S. export control actions, to evade them, get around them. I wouldn't want to speculate on what those tools are, but we do have tools that can address that, and that would seek to account for that.
That is absolutely disgusting. It is so gross. What he's basically saying is we're going to strangle Russia economically, and if any other country tries to come in, and he uses the term backfill, if any other country comes in and tries to provide Russia with the goods and services that they need, we're going to punish you. We have tools. We have tools to stop you from doing business with Russia. Because the pain only works if we can inflict the pain and stop anybody else from coming to their rescue, to come and help them and trade with them. We've got tools to deal with that. And this, I'm telling you right now, this is the kind of belligerence these psychopaths in Washington, D.C., for decades under Republicans and Democrats, this kind of belligerence, and there's more coming from the other side of the aisle, from Republicans, including our own Roger Wicker and Cindy Hyde Smith. This kind of belligerence means that as soon as these foreign countries realize that, you know, the dollar is in trouble, that the United States, and we're already very weak, but when the dollar really, if we go into this inflationary cycle and the dollar becomes weaker and weaker and weaker, they will put their foot on the throat of the U.S. dollar and go ahead and rip it out of the world. And I wouldn't blame them a single bit. I don't want to live through that. That's not going to be pretty. But we have been using the dollar as a club over the heads of every country to get them to do our bidding because they needed our dollars. We could cut them off from this or cut them off from that. When they see a chance to get back at us, they will. They will. That man right there, Mike Pompeo, all the rest of them, Cindy Hyde Smith, Roger Wicker, these belligerents are going to be the ones that if we go into inflation, they will be the ones responsible for the rest of the world going, screw the U.S., now we can take them down. More arrogance here. I want you to listen to Joe Biden. He's got a creepy face on in this video. I wish I could show it to you. He just looks like a psychopath in this thing. He's going to talk about Nord Stream 2 and the Russians who have been trying to sell their natural resources to countries that are willingly going to buy it. But he's going to put a stop to that.
Let me answer the first question first. If Germany, if Russia invades, that means tanks or troops crossing the border of Ukraine again, then there will be no longer a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it.
But how will you do that exactly, since the project and control of the project is within Germany's control?
We will, I promise you, we'll be able to do it.
He's got this little blank-eating grin on his face. I promise you, we can stop it. The reporter says, how do you stop Nord Stream 2? This is a pipeline into Germany. Germany can make up their own decisions whether they want to take Russian oil. Russia can decide whether or not. No, I promise you, we can stop it. And then he smiles. That's psychopathic stuff. And for all of you out there who are Russia hawks or Iran hawks, or you just want to see America exert its leadership and you think Joe Biden's just weak, no, Joe Biden is a thug. He's a blood-soaked, warmongering criminal. And I ask you, would you allow any other country to dictate who we can trade with and who we can't trade with, what we can sell and what we can't sell? Would you take a blockade of the United States? We've invaded seven countries. Just within the last 20 years, we've got our troops all over the place. What, 160 countries or something like that? Would you sit by and just say, oh, well, I guess we got to go without food and medicine for a while. I don't blame Russia and China for encircling us and cutting us off with a bunch of sanctions and blockades. I guess we deserve it. Would you allow that? A bunch of our children are going to die for lack of medication and nutrition, but, you know, it's okay. Of course not. The rest of the world doesn't want to be cut off like that either. To come back to Roger Wicker and Cindy Hyde-Smith when I come back, Republican senators have jumped into the breach on something. On inflation? No. On spending? No. None of these things that affect you, but they are getting mobilized. 33 Republican senators led by that stalwart Ted Cruz. They've jumped into action on one thing. I'll talk about it more. All right, the psychopathy, am I pronouncing that right? That comes out of Washington, D.C., infests both parties when it comes to foreign policy stuff. There was a Times of Israel story this past week, ran on the top of Drudge. It was a picture of a streaking missile where it said, Iran has developed a missile that can reach Israel or United States interests. I can't remember what it said, or threaten the U.S., Well, first, when I saw this, I said, oh, you mean to tell me that Iran has just come up with a missile that can go from Iran? But, of course, no. It's about our interests over there, interests in air quotes here in the studio. This is Times of Israel. Iran unveiled a new missile on Wednesday with a reported range that would allow it to reach both U.S. bases in the region as well as targets inside its arch foe, Israel. I've got a solution to the U.S. bases. Close the U.S. bases and bring our kids home. That's one of the ways that Iran can't touch us. One of my favorite memes is a picture of all of the little X's where all the U.S. bases are. And it says if Iran didn't want a confrontation with the U.S., maybe it shouldn't have put his country in the middle of all of our bases. Well, we can get out of harm's way tomorrow if we want to. By just shutting down all of these bases and actually bringing our troops home to protect the United States. But of course, this is largely about Israel and Saudi Arabia. That's why we have the dust up with Iran. I know a lot of people really hate Iran. You can show me on the doll where Iran touched you, but it's because Donald Trump told you Iran's no good. And so you believe that any action against Iran is a good action. Yeah, that Iraq war was bad, and the Afghanistan war was bad, and the Libyan war was bad, and the Syrian war was bad. The Somalian war is bad. The war in Yemen is bad. But that Iran, we definitely need to take military action against Iran because Donald Trump said so. A group of 33 Senate Republicans are warning they will try to block a revival of the Iran nuclear deal. President Biden doesn't present the terms for the agreement to Congress for review and approval. This is led by Ted Cruz. I would say maybe the only good thing that was done during the Obama administration was actually a deal that took all of this hostility off the table with Iran. Iran was never shown to have violated any of the mechanisms in that treaty. Donald Trump came in and ripped it up, not because it was a threat to the United States, not because Iran had violated any of these things. Do I like the government of Iran? No. I know there are people out there that get mad at me, so I got to make sure I tell you. But Donald Trump came in and ripped up the thing because he was doing the bidding of his real masters, which are in Saudi Arabia and Israel. And they want to make sure that Iran is isolated and made a world pariah. I know you like to think different, that Iran is this existential threat. Tell me why Iran shouldn't have a nuclear weapon. I don't want them to. But there's only one country that's used nuclear weapons. You would think that maybe the focus on taking nuclear weapons away from a country would be based on the ones that have actually used nuclear weapons to kill hundreds of thousands of people. And we live in that country. But Republicans, including Roger Wicker and Cindy Hyde-Smith, as I say, are they addressing the inflation? No. But they have snapped into action. Snapped into action when it comes to a potential peace deal or arms inspection deal with Iran. And that is because the Republicans are incredibly wrong on this, and they're just whores for wars. The senators argued an agreement would be, quote, of such gravity for U.S. national security unquote, that it would be, by definition, a treaty requiring the advice and consent of two-thirds of the Senate. Iran's done nothing to us save skirmishes along the Iraqi border where our troops were. And I don't know if you've seen a globe lately. Iraq's a pretty far reach from us. And most people listening to me now have finally come to the realization. I do thank Donald Trump for this, for waking up a lot of Republicans to the wars. We probably shouldn't be halfway around the world fighting in the sand of Iraq in the first place. That was a George W. Bush screw up. But it does happen that when you fight proxy wars on the border of another country, sometimes that country does engage you, and there has been some conflict between Americans and Iranian forces, at least our proxies, on either side of that. Outside of that, Iran's done nothing to the United States, not to, since 1979, and I explained that, I guess, last week when I'd first seen Argo, and, you know, we toppled the government in their country in 1953. You know, the sickest thing about all this stuff, and again, you're not going to hear this on any conservative radio, you're not going to hear Ted Cruz talk about this, that Iran in the 1950s, heading into 1953, was a very westernized country. Their president, Mossadegh, I believe was educated in London. It was very westernized. There were coffee shops. People were walking around, no headscarves on. They were kind of doing their things. It was kind of the western outpost in the middle of the Middle East, a very civilized society. The United States couldn't have that because a part of this civilized society, Mossadegh wanted to use the oil in their country for the benefit of their own people. So he kicked out some of the big global oil companies. And as soon as he did that, his fate was sealed. And the United States, in Operation Ajax in 1953, went in and overthrew the democratically elected Western-style government. And I'm not saying it was the kind of freedom we have here in the United States, but Mossadegh was a very popular leader and educated in London, not in the mosques of Tehran. And we toppled that government all about the oil so that we could go in, put our strongman in, and the big oil companies could go back in there and get their oil, what they considered their oil, and tell the Iranian people, it's our oil now. And they suffered under that for, you know, 26 years before they finally had enough and the Islamic Revolution came. Again, just like Ukraine, the United States has created all of the hostilities in Ukraine by overthrowing the government of Ukraine in 2014. We created all of the hostilities in Iran by overthrowing their government in 1953. Well, he's always blaming America. No, I'm just telling you history. There is no uproar in Ukraine right now if Ukraine was still headed by a government that was friendly to Russia. They were getting along. You didn't hear about any skirmishes between Ukrainians and Russians in 2013, 2012, 2011, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. None of that was happening until we overthrew the democratically elected government in Ukraine and installed our puppets to be hostile to Russia. We've created this whole thing. And right now we're trying to create a pretext for war. And that's exactly the same thing that has happened with Iran. It's the same playbook that these psychopaths, that even Eisenhower, as president, as a Republican president, former general Eisenhower, warned us of these things, and Americans are still, okay. It's really quite unbelievable. But you're Cindy Hyde-Smith and Roger Wicker. They're not going to help you out with inflation. They're not going to help you out with it. They're never going to talk about the Fed. They're not going to do anything. They're not going to close the borders. But they are hell-bent. We do not do another nuclear deal with Iran. They jumped into action. Doesn't that make you feel good? What's the frequency? Can it be shot? Things are drained. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We're about to get into my narration of the entire world's descent into true madness in this week on the Crazy Train. But I wanted to address something during the commercial break just then. If you're listening on the podcast, you didn't hear it. But there's a commercial going out there for Birch Gold. Gold is a potential hedge towards particularly an inflationary environment. It just protects purchasing power. But Steve Bannon comes on and does a commercial for Birch Gold saying, Biden's out-of-control spending has led to all of this inflation. And that's because I guess Steve Bannon just needs to keep you on the plantation. He could have easily said, due to years and years, decades and decades of endless money printing, inflation has finally shown its ugly face to the American people. He could have said anything. He could have actually blamed what it was. But, of course, he's got to keep you on the political plantation. That's Steve Bannon. And shame on Birch Gold for airing that ad. They understand what leads to inflation is not one human being with a bunch of stupid plans for 1 year. Yeah, everything was humming along great. And Joe Biden, he's so powerful. He came in and unleashed the inflation all by himself. Really gross stuff. Shame on Steve Bannon for being that. But I know it's popular. It's popular. That's why he does it. Anyway, I digress. We'll get back to what we do every Friday starting at 10:30. And that is This Week on the Crazy Train.
All aboard!
Let's see. Now, I have got a... I've got a clip now to play that it really deserves a little bit of visual to it, but I don't have that luxury, so we're going to do it. Have you ever seen a movie where a bunch of hostages, you know, maybe a robber takes over a bank or whatever, and they're all blindfolded or they're all held in a hot room, and their stuff goes on endlessly, and then they finally the cops come in and they say, situation's been resolved. All the, you know, all of the terrorists have been dispatched with. You're free to go now. And you hear the people just break out in applause. They all thought they were going to die. That's a similar sound to this.
Starting tomorrow, we don't have to wear masks anymore.
And so that's a school teacher telling her class of kids, we are no longer going to torture you anymore. It's just unbelievable because these masks were never necessary. And now you hear what has been pent up in these kids. We have just been, we're going to stop beating you, essentially is what it is. Well, thank God. The abuse of people is all over the world. And these poor people who practice their whole lives, train, eat right. They do everything. They commit to their sport to go to the Olympics, and this is what they find.
Just hours away from the start of the Winter Games and inside the Olympic bubble, another world entirely. Cocktails served by walking hazmat suits and robots roaming the hallways spraying disinfectant.
Oh, that's
this
good
morning's
for you.
Opening ceremony, a much more subdued celebration, set to last only 100 minutes compared to Tokyo's 4-hour opener last summer. And while Beijing's 2008 ceremony had 15,000 performers in the spotlight, today only 3,000 will be included. 95% of those are teenagers, marking the first time in Olympic history teens are invited on such a large scale. As far as spectators go, Vladimir Putin will be in attendance. When he attended the opening ceremony in Beijing back in 2008, Russia invaded Georgia on the same day, making many uneasy in light of current tensions in Ukraine.
I guess I should have put that clip probably in the last segment in False Flag Friday. Georgia actually attacked Russia. It was one of the first times I really saw wholesale just flat out lie by the media about who started what, when, and where. Georgia, you can go look. Georgia did a sneak attack on Russian barracks, I think like in the middle of the night, and Russia responded, and everyone failed to mention the sneak attack on Russian troops and just reported on Russia's going after Georgia. A lot of stories about that one, the Georgian president running around like a hysterical person thinking bombs were going to drop out of the sky at any moment. It was just bizarro world. But anyway, poor Olympians, they're over there. They're serving them cocktail suits and hazmat. Cocktails in hazmat suits. They've been going after the truckers. We've talked about that. They are really trying to paint these truckers. You know, there's a lot of people have said there's a media blackout on this. That was true for a few days, but the media has been reporting on the trucker protest up in Canada. Unfortunately, this is how they've been reporting on it.
Sedition, insurrection, a threat to democracy.
This city is under siege. They are now calling it an occupation.
Alarming situation there in Ottawa.
The police chief is calling it a nationwide insurrection driven by madness.
This is kind of our insurrection by air horn moment. I think it's part of the globalization of Trumpism.
Canadians know where I stand.
There hasn't been as much violence as some had perhaps projected, but that does not necessarily mean that it has been peaceful.
Reports of severe vandalism and criminal behavior.
The streets are clogged. The honking is incessant and deafening.
This pandemic has sucked for all Canadians.
Residents that I have spoken to who say they feel terrorized
intimidated.
Residents say they feel like hostages.
Residents in that area say that they are being held hostage, that this freedom has essentially, this freedom convoy, as they call it, has essentially imposed a lockdown on them.
Some protesters harassed a soup kitchen.
These anti-vaxxers actually took food from the mouths of the homeless.
Hungry, yeah.
Because they're so put upon.
There have not been any violent outbursts. However, horns have been honking for 12 to 21 hours a night.
The small fringe minority of people who are on their way to Ottawa or who are holding unacceptable views that they're expressing.
Many. Yeah, that was the statement that kicked it all off. That really ticked people off, the unacceptable views from Trudeau.
Them are holding Confederate flags.
I've heard there's QAnon supporters in the crowd.
We've seen swastikas. We've seen the Confederate flag. We've seen flags with Justin Trudeau, our prime minister, in a noose. Lots of Donald Trump flags as well. People chanting, "Let's go, Brandon."
It is actually one of the rare times in history you're going to see swastikas and yellow stars at the same protest.
A few people shouting and waving swastikas does not define who Canadians are.
Ottawa is being besieged by a group of anti-do-anything-about-COVID truckers called the Freedom Convoy.
A so-called Freedom Convoy.
So-called Freedom Convoy of truckers.
It's a cult.
Yes, it is.
We've heard it called a nationwide insurrection.
A threat to democracy, an insurrection, sedition.
This is a moment for responsible leaders to think carefully about where they stand and who they stand with.
So there it is. It's an insurrection. One of those things that's always funny to me is it's a so-called, there's another supercut out there of them. It's so-called Freedom Convoy, the so-called Freedom Convoy, the so-called Freedom. That's a very derogatory term. I mean, I guess you could say, well, on Sunday, I know a lot of people will be watching the so-called Super Bowl. I mean, is it really that super? So-called. You know, so they do these things. So that's your media reporting on those things. Lena Wen. She is one of the most despicable human beings I've ever seen. She's been so bad for 2 years, you know, talking about trying to make the life of the unvaccinated painful. She has trotted out and supported every draconian policy around the world. And now she just comes out and just acts like nothing's happened and she's just following the science now that everything's changed. And she acts like she was not the proponent of all of these failed policies.
Do you agree with the move?
I do. There was a and is a time and place for pandemic restrictions, but when they were put in, it was always with the understanding that they would be removed as soon as we can. And in this case, circumstances have changed. Case counts are declining. Also, the science has changed. We know that.
Oh, yeah, this is it. The science has changed.
Vaccines protect very well against Omicron, which is the dominant variant.
If that's the case, why is Pfizer rushing to do an Omicron vaccine? If this one's working great against the Omicron, then why in the world are they rushing to get a brand new one out for the Omicron?
Everyone 5 and older have widespread access to vaccines.
Why does widespread access to vaccines change anything? Just because something exists, the kids aren't taking it up. I think maybe it's 10 or 15% of children 5 to 11 have actually been fully vaccinated. So she says, oh, yeah, they can take the masks off now because there's access to vaccines. If nobody takes the vaccine, then nothing has changed.
And we also know about one-way masking, the idea that even if other people around you are not wearing masks, if you wear a high-quality mask, that also protects you, the wearer, too. And so in this case, I'm not saying, I don't think anyone really is saying that no one should ever wear masks, but rather that the responsibility should shift from a government mandate imposed from the state or the local district or the school. Rather, it should shift to an individual responsibility by the family who can still decide that their child can wear a mask if needed.
Oh, so we're shifting to the responsibility of the parents and the family for their own children. Well, isn't that nice? And it's because, and she just listed off the ways the science has changed. None of those things have changed. That hasn't changed anything. It's just they're trying. And I do believe this is an election year thing. It is the polling has changed.
In New Jersey, for instance, their new case average is just over 4.
Now, you're going to love this one. Wait till you hear this little nugget.
1,000. Is that an acceptable number to do this, or are they projecting out to March 7th at this point?
I don't think we should be looking at case counts at all at this.
What? What? This is Lena Wen, who has been on CNN next to, right there on the right side of the screen, where they have been doing case counts for 2 years, daily case counts, total cases reported, cases in this state, cases in that state. It's been a case-demic the whole way. And this woman has the audacity to come out and go, I don't think we should be really looking at cases anyway.
You know, take New Jersey, the case in New Jersey, for instance. Their new case average is just over 4,000. Is that an acceptable number to do this, or are they projecting out to March 7th at this point?
I don't think we should be looking at case counts at all at this point, especially
Lord.
When we're dealing with a milder variant and when so many people were exposed to Omicron and therefore have at least some level of protection either through vaccination or immunity.
Oh, and she's talking about natural immunity suddenly.
The key number that we should be looking at is hospitalizations. If our ICUs and hospitals in that particular region are not overwhelmed, if they're not over capacity, we can set a number, for example, 75% or 80% full, then we should be able to relax all restrictions. And I actually believe that we should be starting to, with the first restriction removed, should actually be the restriction on children. Because while for adults, you could say, well, what's the harm of adults masking when they go into a grocery store? There actually is a harm that we should be discussing of children continuing to mask.
What? Oh, suddenly 2 years later, after torturing children for 2 years, she suddenly recognizes a downside.
That doesn't mean that masking doesn't have its place for children when there are very high rates of hospitalization. If we get a new variant in the future that children are particularly susceptible to, we may want to bring masks back. But we should also be intellectually honest and say that masking has had a cost, especially for the youngest learners, people with English as a second language, children with learning disabilities. There has been a cost to them. So the risk-benefit calculation has really changed.
Yeah. How she does that. Wow. I mean, she has absolutely sold her soul. This is just a gross clip. I apologize. Most of the things on here, I just like to point to the absurdity of it. But this is, for this week on the crazy train, this is the actual insane part.
This morning, the federal government already prepping the first 10 million doses of the under 5 Pfizer vaccine ready to go as soon as the FDA gives a final sign-off. The CDC tells ABC News there will be plenty of supply with enough vaccine doses for all children in the age group. Doses for the youngest population will be distributed in maroon-capped vials to differentiate that specific formula from the vials for the 5 to 11-year-olds, which are orange-capped.
So they're coming after the under fives. You know, it's FDA certainly will approve this. The insanity is not all here in the United States. This was just a really disgusting story, again, from down under.
Next guest, unfortunately, did not have such a positive experience when she gave birth to her son at Caboolture Hospital in Queensland last month. Alicia Peake had her son Remy forcibly removed from her when informed that her teenage daughter might have been a close contact at work.
A woman has her baby, a newborn baby, forcibly removed from her because her daughter may have been exposed. This is another child entirely. The other child may have been exposed to another child. Of course, I've done this earlier in the week, but we'll hit it again because this is... I smell a rat here. Something's coming our way. They're not done with this. I don't believe for a second they're done with this. They're, you know, it's kind of like you got to take the pressure out of the tea kettle every now and then so it doesn't explode. But then you can put the cap back on and build the pressure again. You just, you know, you always let a little steam out so it doesn't explode. They're coming after us with other stuff, and this may be it.
Researchers in Europe say a newly discovered variant of HIV moves faster than others to become full-blown AIDS. They say the standard HIV treatments do work for this variant.
But don't worry about that. So there's a new super HIV that's out there. Well, we've talked about it. A lot of people were testing positive for HIV after getting the shots. People were saying, well, that's just false positive. Something in the vaccine is making it trigger a positive HIV test. You can go look these things up. But the bottom line is, don't worry if there becomes a new aggressive HIV out there. We got that covered.
Moderna has just begun a clinical trial for its experimental HIV vaccine. It uses the same mRNA technology found in COVID vaccines. Moderna hopes the vaccine shot will induce a specific class of white blood cells, which can then turn into neutralizing antibodies. The company says the vaccine appeared to work in 97% of participants in last year's concept trial.
Didn't that 97 figure, boy, they just trot that out. Do they even do trials anymore, or they just go, hey, let's just call it 97%? That seems to work.
Participants in phase one of the trial just received their first doses and will be closely watched for the next 6 months.
Yeah, there we go. So, new super strain of HIV. Luckily, oh, thank goodness, Moderna's on the case. And then this last story, I want people to always, always, always remember this. When you hear people out there hawking the vaccines, I've told you about the $3 billion fund that's been out there for influencers. These people who take to social media or the Stephen Colberts, there's a lot of money sloshing around to try to convince people to take these shots. I mean, hell's bells. Boy, Pfizer and Moderna knocked the cover off the ball with this one. They got the government to put up $3 billion to get people to go out there and be spokesmen for these shots. But they're not the only ones. It's not just celebrities and influencers.
The Biden administration is allocating tens of millions of dollars to groups across the U.S. who are working to build confidence in COVID-19 vaccines. Here's NPR's Selena Simmons-Duffin.
Secretary of Health and Human Services Javier Becerra says it's important for people to hear from trusted messengers about vaccines.
Whether that trusted messenger is your school teacher or your pastor or your barber.
He says this funding allows those trusted people to guide you on the very important decision to get vaccinated. For example, since they received their first funds last June, Dr. Samova Soha of the RISE Coalition says groups have learned how to reach migrant farm workers through carefully timed radio spots. She says the new round of funding will allow the coalition to build on what they've learned and get more people vaccinated.
Yeah, there you go. These people are getting paid, and includes school teachers, pastors, and your barber.
All over the world, this is Captain America calling. I bailed you out when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment as we put another week in the books. I want to remind everybody, I'll give you my best piece of advice for the week, and that is, if you're hungry this weekend, you're looking for somewhere to go, someplace to take the kids or a date or hang out with the guys and catch a game, that place should be Your Pie up in Gluckstadt. They're at 340 Calhoun Station Parkway, right up there by Germantown High School. They got 10-inch brick oven fire pizzas, and you can now online order a 14-inch pizza. That's the big daddy. That has to be by online order only, so you can order that online. Check that out. You can also download the Your Pie app. That's what you can also order through that, and it's going to get you all kinds of benefits and bennies and points to earn towards free things. You're going to go many times if you go once, so you might as well get the app and scan your receipts and earn points for free pizzas and drinks and gelatos and brownies and all those good things. They got 10-inch brick oven fired pizzas, 14-inch if you order online, pastas, paninis, salads, gelato, beer, wine. They got it all. It's a great location, locally owned, veteran-owned business, and you definitely need to check them out. Again, that's 340 Calhoun Station Parkway, Your Pie. Make sure you get the app to get everything you got coming to you from them. Express your inner pizza. All right, I've only got a few minutes left, so I got to kind of parse through the remaining clips I've got here. I've got a great thing on CNN, but I don't have time because it's a two-parter. It's got a lot. So I'll leave you with this as we have the dust up with Russia. It is good to know we've got a commander in chief that is really well engaged in deep thought about every move that America makes.
And there was no way we were ever going to unite Afghanistan. No way that was going to happen.
Third time's the charm. Good grief. Holy cow. I thought this one was kind of funny. Even congressmen are getting sick of the hystericals up there and their mask demands on Capitol Hill.
This is the way Beatty described what happened. She wrote, "Today, while heading to the House floor for votes, I respectfully asked my colleague, Representative Hal Rogers, to put on a mask while boarding the train. He then poked my back, demanding I get on the train. When I asked him not to touch me, he responded, 'Kiss my ass.'"
So, Look, we're all sick of you people projecting your fear onto us, and you've got to assume that that is a triple or quadruple vaxxed Congress critter up there that's worried about somebody standing next to her maskless. This was just a, I don't know, this just was an odd story. Elon Musk had a bit of a kerfuffle.
SpaceX launched its newest fleet of internet service satellites into orbit only a week ago, but already most are destroyed. The rest apparently will be soon. SpaceX says a geomagnetic storm struck the 49 small satellites, knocking them out of orbit. 40 have already reentered the atmosphere.
Ouch. That's got to hurt. And then this one, these poor kids. The abuse of the children will just not stop.
Time to check the pulse, and we begin with school lunch going vegan. Today is the first Vegan Friday at New York City Public Schools. Students will see an increased number of vegan options on the menu each Friday. Today's include vegan tacos and chickpea stew.
The mayor, a vegan himself, pushed for the vegan lunch program. He says students want healthier food options. Milk will still be served to meet federal guidelines.
So there you go. Vegan lunches. I'm sure the kids are clamoring for that. This is step one. Step two, as I've told you, they are going to be geared. It will not be long till I'm playing a clip where the school lunches are starting to include bugs. As the economy collapses, as I narrated to you in the first hour, they will use sustainability or some climate change nonsense to try to herd us all into eating crickets and cockroaches. That's coming. So you'll have mac and cheese with cricket parts. That'll be the new deflation depression era food source for Americans. So poor kids, they get out of the masks only to shove nasty vegan food into their mouth. Trust me, it's not going to be good quality. That's my problem. That's all the time I got.
No,
see you Monday. Bye-bye.
How hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how